is the Turf Zone Podcast, your central information and news hub, bringing together professionals from turf associations across multiple states to share things to help you in your business. Brought to you in partnership with our friends at the Turfgrass Council of North Carolina. This episode is sponsored in part by BuySod, world-class service on demand. Visit us online at www.buysod.com. Now, let's get in the zone.
Hi, welcome to the Turfgrass Council of North Carolina's January Turf Zone podcast. This month, we're featuring an article from Dr. Dinesha Seth Carley of the Horticultural Science Department at NC State and Dr. Terry Billison of the Entomology Department of NC State. The article is titled, Five Steps to Creating a Pollinator-Friendly Habitat on Your Golf Course, and will be read by co-author Dr. Carley. Be sure to look for show notes and photos attached to this podcast.
Thanks, Julie. Insects are the most common and abundant pollinators in the world. Although bees may be the most well-known insect pollinators, there are many other different insect species, including butterflies, moths, wasps, flies, and beetles, which also play an important role in plant pollination. Due to increased interest in pollinator and wildlife communities in turfgrass environments, we are conducting a study examining how the implementation of pollinator-friendly habitat on established golf courses impact pollinator populations. In the spring and summer of 2018, we set out across the state of North Carolina, sampling for pollinators in managed turfgrass environments to determine which insects were already present prior to establishing refuge areas the following season. This fall, we returned to those same sites to plant pollinator-friendly seed mixes. After some trial and error, we have identified a few things to know prior to establishing pollinator habitat on your own golf course. Our five summarized key steps to creating pollinator-friendly habitat are as follows. Step number one, identify a suitable location and prep the site. In order to do that, select a site on your golf course that will be visible to members but is out of the way of traffic or errant golf balls. For our research, we selected areas lining cart paths, natural rough areas, especially around trees, and along tree lines. If you have a lot of trees on your course, be sure to choose a site that gets at least 6 to 8 hours of direct sunlight a day in order to establish your site. It will be far more successful in that way. Also, be sure to eliminate plant competition, e.g. weeds, by removing shrubs, small trees, and unwanted plants either by hand cultivation or selective herbicide application. If a controlled spring burn is an option for your site, that too can help eliminate brush cover and undesirable weeds. After all weed roots are dead, switch to shallow cultivations, time to eliminate freshly germinated weed seedlings. This generally tends to occur 2 weeks after the first cultivation. If you are planting large pollinator sites with seeds in the fall, use a harrow or drag to produce a smooth, clod-free seedbed. If your soil is subject to erosion, you should certainly consider deferring planting until the spring and first plant a winter cover crop if you have already tilled the site. If necessary, a rototiller can be used to break up the ground and soften the soil. It is important to till only as deep as necessary to remove old roots. Otherwise, you may encourage other weed growth. Tilling down 4 to 6 inches should do the trick. Drag the area again to break up any large clumps of sod or soil. After a final dragging, the soil is ready to plant. Step number two, seed the prepped area. Seed can be applied either by hand or by spreader. Scatter the seed slowly to ensure an even distribution. Sand, compost, peat moss, or moistened sawdust can be added to your seed mix to increase the volume of what you are spreading in large areas. For large sites, dividing your planting area and seed mix into smaller parts can facilitate even seed distribution. Keep in mind that sand may be too heavy as filler for very large areas. A surefire method of sowing seeds that encourages an even application is to separate the seeds you're planting, no matter how much that is, into roughly two equal parts. Put the first half in a clean bucket or a coffee can or anything you have handy that will hold the seed, and then add in roughly 8 parts of dry filler to 1 part seed. Always make sure your filler is dry, especially if it's been stored outdoors. So wet filler tends to clump and might cause your seed to be applied in an uneven fashion. you'll have the best chance of an even application if you scatter your seed in two sowings. To do this, take the container with half of your seeds and sow them as evenly as possible while walking across your site from north to south. Then, take the other half and apply in a similar manner, this time walk from west to east. Post-seeding, it is a good idea to pack or roll the newly seeded area to firm the soil around the seed, reduce moisture loss, and discourage weed growth. For small-sized patches, you can use your feet to compress the seeds into the soil. For medium-sized gardens and beds, lay a piece of cardboard or plywood over the soil and walk all over it. This will evenly distribute your weight across the soil, giving the same compression effects as using a professional roller. For large meadow-sized plantings, you can use a seed roller, either as a tractor attachment or as a walk-behind tool. No matter if you're planting in the spring or fall, there is generally no need to cover the seed. Wildflower seeds are often very tiny and require sunlight to germinate. Unlike vegetable seeds, which are typically planted in holes and buried within the soil, wildflower seeds are scattered on top of the soil and left exposed. Step 3, irrigation. Wildflower seeds and seedlings must stay moist until they are about 4 to 6 inches tall, which typically takes anywhere from 4 to 6 weeks. Prior to reaching this height, the seedlings are unable to access enough groundwater because they don't have very large roots. Monitor the seeded area for the first few weeks, especially if the site has not received any rainfall, and wet the soil as needed. You don't need to do a lot of it. Remember, the seeds are very small, so about 1/18 of an inch should be sufficient. Mowing is step 4. Unlike other flower beds, wildflower areas can be mowed, which will help prevent quick-growing weeds from excessively shading your new native seedlings. Mow if weedy growth reaches 8 to 10 inches and cut everything to a height of about 4 to 5 inches. Don't worry too much about trimming your wildflowers. They should be okay, especially if the weed competition is reduced. Stop mowing by the end of the first season. If weeds are thick at the beginning of the second season, you can mow again or spot mow once or twice. If you choose to mow again to knock back the weeds that you still have, be sure you raise your cutting height to 10 to 12 inches at that point. Step 5, long-term management. Most native wildflower plantings, after 2 or 3 growing seasons, need to be burned annually for the next 5 or more years to become well established. Burning yields better growth and more flowers. It also reduces the weed populations. If a planting is not periodically burned, a thatch layer can build up over the years, causing some native plant species to grow poorly or even die out completely. Burning is the single most important management practice for native wildflower plantings. Burning in March or April will stimulate growth of native plants and give them a competitive edge over weeds. However, it is always important to remember to use caution and common sense when burning and follow local fire regulations, obtain proper permits, and have plenty of tools and assistance and help on hand. If burning is not permitted at your site, or if you prefer not to use this method, you can mow or manually remove thatch in the early spring. In North Carolina, that typically is around late February to mid-April. Last year's dead stems will not hide the new growth and flowers, and the sun's rays will still be able to warm the soil. Of course, there are always challenges when establishing new managed wildflowers or native planting areas. Be sure to mark newly planted areas with flags, a border, or even a sign to alert maintenance personnel that the area should not be mowed or sprayed. Be sure to monitor the site each week to check for seedling sprouting and growth, adequate soil moisture, and any signs of mechanical disruption. It may be useful to take pictures of the plants as they flower in the spring and summer, along with some of the visiting pollinator species, to include it in your newsletters to your members. Remember, attracting beneficial insects to a managed turfgrass area is easier than you think. Golf courses provide so many resources in terms of irrigation, fertilizer, and other inputs to encourage healthy turfgrass growth. Adding some wildflowers to the environment takes minimal effort. The result will be a beautiful sight-enhancing feature that not only provides important refuge for beneficial pollinating insect species, but an additional conversation piece for your members as well.
You've been listening to The Turf Zone. Thank you to our sponsors, including Buy Sod, world-class service on demand, Visit us online at www.bysod.com. For more episodes of The Turf Zone, visit theturfzone.com and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast app.